Thanks for joining the podcast with Tamara Gondor. Conversations with everyday innovators that reject status quo, think differently, and make a positive difference in their world. Listen in so you can ignite innovation, influence others, and make an impact too. And now your host, CrossFit addict, knee-high sock lover, and according to her kids, average cook, Tamara Gondor.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode. Today is going to be so good. And how can I make that promise at the beginning of the podcast? Well, first of all the everyday innovators that we interview are amazing. But this guy I've known for a couple of years now, and I stalk him a little bit, and I know that he's got some insights that are going to help us innovate and elevate our game on a day-to-day basis. They are so simple, but so powerful at the same time. So I'm excited to have him on. Dre, welcome to the show. Tell the listeners a little bit about who you are and the business that you're in.
Well, I'm excited to be here tomorrow. I'm glad you had me on. Thank you for sharing your platform. And a little bit about who I am, 2-minute version, come from the city of Philadelphia, now in Miami, Florida. Background, always into sports. Finally got into team sports, played a little bit of football, didn't really get deep into it, didn't have the equipment, played some baseball, didn't really have a lot of talent. Finally got into basketball around age, 14, which is pretty late for an athlete that wants to go somewhere in a sport. Kyle was going to go into pros. Only played 1 year of high school, didn't play much, walked on to play in college, which means no scholarship offered, coaches didn't know me. Literally walked into the gym and had to earn my spot, which I was able to do. Played okay in college, but I didn't set the world on fire. And again, I was playing at the Division III level, which is the third tier. And most of the pro athletes don't come from D3. So getting out of college, I wanted to play pro, had to hustle my way into the pros. And that's really where I started to use my marketing, promotion, and selling skills, even before I really knew that I had them, even though I have a business degree in business from Penn State University. But they didn't teach me anything that I know now when it comes to selling. But started a 9-year pro career in 2005. At the same time, I started publishing videos to this new website called YouTube. And that is where I had basically had 2 careers going at the same time, Tamara. Didn't know it until maybe 5 years later that the internet thing would be a business. Because if anyone remembers that time frame, it wasn't a lot of money to be made just from posting stuff on the internet. At that time, you were kind of a bum who needed to get a real job if you were posting content on the internet in 2005. So from there, I started talking about mindset, because a lot of players just started asking me about my mental approach, because they learned a little bit about that background that I just told you. Barely played in high school, walked on in college, but I still played pro. So how'd you keep the mentality to do that? And that's where I started talking about the things that became what I do now, which is the work on your game philosophy. Just taking the mental tools to help athletes get to the top 1% in sports and translating the use of those tools over to work and everyday life. So I stopped playing ball in 2015. Been doing this full time ever since. Written a bunch of books, created courses, coaching, speaking, and a lot of stuff in between, which I'm sure we'll get into.
So I want to ask you a couple of questions about that, Dre. So I want to start with, you said you had kind of 2 careers in parallel. We just talk a little bit about how that impacted where you are today and how that came together, because I think oftentimes we see those things as very distinct or not impacting each other. And I'm not sure that's the experience you've had.
As far as the multiple careers, no, they were actually very much intertwined, because I started playing ball in 2005. So I'm playing overseas, and most people, even if you're a basketball fan, don't know anything about overseas basketball. Like, nobody knows me. When I go to the mall and somebody recognizes me, it's not because they saw me overseas, it's because they saw me on YouTube. Right. So I'm playing, and that is ironic, right? Because you do all that hard work to become a pro athlete, but you're known for something that you did in your backyard on a phone, right? So,
well said.
Right. So when I'm playing overseas and I start putting the videos up, the thing that gave me credibility to those people watching me on YouTube was the fact that I was actually playing pro, and I had played college ball, and they could see that I could play. They were just looking at the video. They're like, all right, this guy looks like he knows what he's doing, but who is he? We never heard of him. So that's when they started to ask me about my background. I'm like, well, I'm actually playing pro right now, and I've been through this background. I went here, I did this, I went to these exposure camps, which is basically a place you go when nobody knows you, but you want to get known. I went to those, and I played my way into pro basketball. So a lot of these players who know the lingo of basketball, they like, all right, this guy did everything that I think I might need to do, and he already did it. And he can explain it. And that was the thing that really caught their ears and caught their eyes. And all of that stuff came together. So by, let's say, that 2009 through 2010 period, that's when, you know, the personal brand started to become a thing that you could actually make money from. I'm still playing ball, and my ability to articulate, which I think is really my, that's really my zone of genius, is my ability to explain stuff. It wasn't even playing ball. It's just my ability to explain how I did it in basketball, because I don't think I'm the best player to ever play ball. I didn't invent the internet. I didn't invent writing books or coaching or any of that, but I invented putting it all together into one. That's what I did. So when, you know, I started writing books and really explaining the mental game, people were like, all right, this guy can, he can make sense of it. Because I didn't invent motivation or discipline or confidence or mental toughness, but my ability to explain it and say it in such a way that, you know, people who are athletes, and I can say this, maybe not everybody can, athletes don't read. And they are really just, they just want to play their sport. But when they heard me talking about it, they're like, okay, like, all right, now I might go read that book. Now I might go read your book, Dre, even though I don't read books. And I think I opened the door for a lot of people from that world. And at the same time, people who are, they look at athletes as cool because, you know, only 1% of athletes get to make it to the pro level and only maybe 3% play college. So when people who weren't even athletes, but they like sports, saw somebody like me, and they're like, all right, this guy's talking about personal development. He's talking about these, you know, life success principles that he just happened to use in sports, but they apply to life. That also drew certain people into me, people who are sports adjacent. So they might watch, you know, the NFL on Sundays, but they work, they put on a suit and go to office Monday through Friday. They get drawn to me as well because they see that here's an athlete, but he's talking about these success principles that can apply to anybody. And that's why I think the majority of my clients these days are not athletes, not even former athletes. They're just people who are, they might know sports, but they hear me talking. They're like, all right, this guy actually knows his stuff. He just happens to have been an athlete.
I think it's hard to deny the discipline and the focus that has to go on to be an athlete. But but you said something earlier too that I want to dig into for a second, because you've told me this story on the side and I don't want to overlook it. You had talked about, you know, you had said you were playing basketball and that you went to this showcase for basketball and everybody on the field, or everybody on the court, excuse me, is good enough to be there at least. Will you tell the story about how you looked at that experience and how you found a way to differentiate yourself? I think all of us are in very competitive marketplaces, whether we realize it or not, for our leadership's attention, our clients' attention, the marketplace's attention. So just going back to that experience, how did you rise up?
Man, that's a great question, because that is, so just to paint the picture for everybody, it's this event called an exposure camp. So I graduated college in 2004 from a Division III. No pro scouts are coming to our games to watch us play. So I, in order for me to play pro, I had to go somewhere where they could see me. So I found out about these events, and this is a pay-to-play event, meaning you pay money to show up and for the opportunity to go play ball there. It's basically like a casting call, but it's for athletes. But it is not free. Like I said, it was $250, which is not a ton of money, but it's a lot when you're a broke college graduate living in your parents' house, sleeping on the couch. So I even paid cash at the door because I didn't have a bank account or a credit card at the time. So I get to that event, and there's 200 players in there, all of us basketball players. We all want to play pro ball, but not most of us hadn't played pro yet. Sometimes you get a few guys who have played already, but they're just looking to better their situation. And the audience is not just random basketball fans. These are coaches, agents, managers, scouts from all around the world who come looking for talent. So you're in the right place at the right time. But now it's kind of like a meat market, because everybody's trying to get seen and everybody's trying to look good. But basketball is a team sport. Right? This is not boxing. Right? This is not golf. Like, you're supposed to play with everybody, but at the same time, try to show off. So it's a delicate balance that you have to strike. So I remember the first game that I got in, and mind you, you're playing on a team with 10 guys that you just met 5 minutes ago with a coach who is a quote unquote coach, not really a coach. And I get in the game, and my first 2 minutes on the court, I wasn't really doing anything. I'm kind of running up and down. Nobody's passing the ball, right? Because everybody's trying to look good. So everybody's just shooting when they get the ball, and I'm not doing anything. So a timeout gets called, and I remember thinking to myself, okay, Dre, like, you're 23 years old. You drove down here in a rental car from Philly. That was a 19-hour drive. You spent your last $250 in cash for this opportunity. You work at Bally Total Fitness. That's where I was working at the time. If you don't do something during this 2 days, this might be it. you might not get another shot here. So you, I don't care what you do, do something. I wasn't even listening to the coach. Just do something. So we get back in the game. I said, all right, I'm going to do something. So next time I got the ball, I just, without thinking, it's just instinctively, just go to the basket, try to dunk on this guy. He kind of fouled me. They didn't call foul, but the ball went in the basket. And I remember I made, the ball goes in and the crowd was like, oh. And that gave me a little bit of confidence, right? Because now I'm like, all right, I'm doing my thing. And I played really well at that camp. It was only 2 days, and you only played two games each day, Saturday and Sunday. And I played really well there, got a really good glowing scouting report. And this is a third party saying positive things about me. I got the footage of proof that I can play against pro-level players, because nothing I did in college was that proof, because these guys aren't pros. So that was really the inflection point that got my career started. And I didn't get signed there. I took that footage and that scouting report, and I got myself an agent. I don't know if I told you about that part. Should I tell you that part, how I got an agent?
To me, that was a great story of not necessarily following the rules if the rules aren't set up for your success.
Right, exactly. So when I get back home, I get the footage and I have the scouting report. So I start calling basketball agents. Because mind you, this is 2005. So there's no Instagram, there's no DMing. I Googled and I looked up every basketball agent I could find. And if they had a phone number or an email, I was either calling them or emailing. If there's a phone number, I called them. And I'm cold calling, literally just trying to sell myself to agents, because I'm figuring the agents, they know the teams overseas. I don't know them, so they can be the go-between. And the agent in basketball is just like a literary agent, an acting agent, same thing. They just know that they know the jobs, you're the talent, they do the connecting. So I called about 60 basketball agents. And out of those 60, 20 of them, I had a conversation and they said, okay, let me see what you got. Now I had to send them my footage. Now again, this is before YouTube, so I'm not sending them links. I had a VHS tape of my footage from that exposure camp. And at the time, and this is something I did ahead of time, the previous Christmas, I bought myself a double-decker VCR so you can make copies of your own tapes, because I knew I would need to do this. I knew this was going to happen. So I'm going to Eckert, the drugstore. I will buy a 10-pack of blank VHS tapes, and I'm making copies of my own VHS, going to the post office, buying bubble mailers, and mailing out my VHS tapes to these basketball agents, hoping to get signed to an agent. Mind you, getting signed to an agent, you get no money. It just means they're going to represent you and try to help you get money. So I'm doing all this on my own dime, on a Bally's salary, Bally Total Fitness salary. So that's how I got my first agent. One agent out of all those tapes I sent out, one agent followed up with me and said, hey, I'm interested in signing you. He signed me. He got me my first job. That was in Kaunas, Lithuania in 05. That's how I got started playing pro basketball.
So Dre, what I really, you can't see me on the podcast, but I'm smiling because I really like that story because, to me, that's a great example of not letting the structure keep you from getting what you're trying to accomplish and thinking differently. There's a lot more innovation in there around how do you go bend the rules a little bit? I mean, nobody else was calling them, right? That wasn't something that you did. You didn't call agents back then. And I think your example of being on the court and kind of it being a meat market and how you explain that, to me, that's in a lot of ways every day at work too. It's like, here we are, we're a team sport, yet I'm trying to show my value and my worth at the same time. And you kind of found a way to bring them together, not at somebody else's expense, but at least to your benefit.
Yeah, exactly. And nowadays, that's more a common thing to do because it's easier to do it passively, like through DMs and emails, et cetera, et cetera. But back then, nobody was thinking of doing it. They were just waiting for somebody to call them. But I'm thinking, hey, if nobody's calling me, I got to call them.
You're listening to Conversations with Everyday Innovators on With Tamara Gondor Podcast. Let's take a moment to thank our generous partners that make this possible.
I want to take a moment to talk about my friends at Howdy Puppy. Dogs experience all the same problems as humans when it comes to joint pain, anxiety, digestion, and arthritis. A great way to help our four-legged family members with these ailments is with CBD-infused pet treats. Who doesn't like treats? As you longtime listeners know, my Mastiff Zoe is part of my family, but is getting older and has some anxiety issues when strangers come around. Howdy Puppy CBD Dog Treats has totally changed her disposition. And I know she feels like her young, energetic, confident self when she gets Howdy Puppy CBD dog treats. There are many CBD-infused dog treats on the market, but the truth is that many of them are overpriced and ineffective. We've looked at dozens of CBD dog treats and found most of them disappointing. Howdy Puppy is among the best brands in the CBD pet business. They deliver consistent quality and their treats look and taste amazing, according to our dogs, of course. The company makes CBD dog treats in three flavors: steak, bacon, and cheese rolls. All of Howdy Puppy CBD treats contain natural ingredients, including high-quality full-spectrum hemp oil, all sourced and made in the USA. Full disclosure, I'm an investor in Howdy Puppy. But before I put my name on the company, I had an independent lab in Denver, Colorado, verify the quality and consistency of their treats. They are truly as advertised. Go online today at howdypuppy.com, link will also be in the show notes, and use promo code Tamara, T-A-M-A-R-A, that's me, to get 20% off the absolute best CBD dog treats on the market. You will not be disappointed. Howdypuppy.com, promo code Tamara. Don't let them suffer needlessly. Let them enjoy life too. Let me fast forward for a second, because that's a great point that you're making. When you think about, I think you do this in everything you do. So when you think about today, how you would differentiate yourself, how you would stand out, how you would show your value, how are you doing that today, now that we have all of this stuff?
Man, that's a great question. So I always, and you're right, I always look at the landscape like that. All right, if there's a bunch of people doing the same thing, and they might be just as good as me. Of course, we all can look in the mirror and think we're the best and all the positive affirmations. But, right, what about somebody else who's not you? Right, why would they believe you're different from anybody else when they have all these choices? How do you keep yourself from being commoditized? So I always would ask myself, all right, what can I do that other people are not going to do? What can I say about myself that not just hyperbole, it's not just puffery, like a used car salesman telling you how great my car is. What's something I can say that you can't deny that it's actually true that separates me from anybody else out there? So for me, when I first started creating content, I said, all right, what can I do? Somebody else starts making basketball videos, they can just take my spot. So what can make me different? I said, all right, I go to the gym every day. So why don't I put out a video every day? All right, nobody's going to beat me at that. So that's what I started doing. When I even started, you know, my podcast, I have a solo podcast. It comes out every single day. Like, nobody's going to beat me at putting it out every day. You might have better content, arguably, but you're not going to put it out every day like I'm putting it out every day. So I always try to figure out what can I say that they're not saying. And really, the great thing about the world that we have now, Tamara, is you can be an individual. You don't have to edit yourself to fit into anybody's box. You can be exactly who you are. And because we have such a direct to consumer connection, you don't have to please anybody or go through any, you know, red tape or jump through any hoops or any gatekeepers to get directly to the person that you want to serve. So being directly who you are, fully that person, the people who want to deal with you are going to raise their hand and identify themselves, as long as you can. Of course, you have to put the business mechanisms in place for them to find you, but that's something that I've always focused on. When I first started getting to this world, when we first met, and I was looking at the speaking world, let me see how I can get into that. And I looked around and said, is this exactly my world? Probably not. I don't think this world is quite ready for me. But
I like, it's not the other way around. Right. I like that.
I don't think they're ready for me. So I just figured, all right, how do I get direct to the people? Because that's how I started. Like, I started out by going direct to the people. They would leave comments, I'll respond to the comments. And when I put out my first product, I just made a little 2-minute YouTube video, put a link, and they start buying it. I said, that's what I need to be doing. That's my niche. Even though it's not basketball anymore, I need to go direct to the people, because they can tell I'm the type of person you can walk up to me in the street because you watch me on YouTube. We can have a conversation. I'm that kind of guy. And that's my zone of genius. That's where I need to be at. So while I will do the stuff where there's the red tape and the jumping through hoops, my sweet spot is direct with the people.
And so I think what you're saying is really powerful, because the theme that I hear is like, what can I do that other people aren't doing? Like, how do I not follow the crowd is really how I think about it. And I think a lot of my career, that's what's helped me get ahead. It's not because I'm definitely not smarter than most people I know. That is for sure. But I'm willing to do things a little bit differently. And I think that's where a lot of success comes from, is just how do you go around things or through things or under things where everybody's trying to go over it. And I think we lose sight of that sometimes because we see everybody else doing it a certain way and we go, oh, well, that has to work. And if I don't do it that way, I'm missing the mark some way. But most of the time that way is so crowded that there's no reason to add to the noise over there. I want to flip it for a second. What's a big challenge that you faced, and how have you overcome it?
Let's talk, I'll think of something from the business world. A big challenge that I faced and how I overcame it is really I had to figure out how I could, the big problem when I first got out of sports, so challenge was, how do I get someone to take me seriously in the business world, completely business, not somebody who is a basketball fan or watch me play basketball. But if I'm coming to them and saying, hey, I want to talk to your audience of people who wear a suit and tie to work every day, and I'm going to give them something useful, well, the question is, okay, what? And why, and how is it going to be useful for them? So I had to create a framework out of the stuff that I was doing, which became, you know, the work on your game philosophy is creating that framework and helping them understand, okay, I'm going to give you these pieces and this is what it's going to do for you at work. Now, while yes, it draws on my background as an athlete, I can directly translate that to you, even though you might not understand anything about the game of basketball. I don't have to talk about it in order to give you value. So the biggest challenge for me, and I think a lot of people who are transitioning from one world to another, is how much of that previous world can you bring with you into the new world, but make sure that it fits the lingo of the new people that you're talking about. So again, that's why I said earlier, Tamara, my sweet spot, my real talent is my ability to articulate and translate concepts and make them simple. And that's how I was able to make that jump from the sports world into the business world.
In both of those, and in the story you shared in the beginning, it really is about communication and the ability to clearly articulate your point of view, whatever that viewpoint is. But you also said something in there that's really interesting, which is you said, you know, I had to figure out the frameworks. I think oftentimes, particularly when we're trying to drive innovation, we have all these dots of knowledge and ideas in our head. And what you did that was so brilliant, I think, is take all of that and put it together to create that framework. And for everybody listening, I just want you to think about if you've got all these insights and ideas and ways you think the company should be doing things or products you want to put out into the marketplace, I would encourage you to do what Dre did, take a step back and just say, how does all this fit together? And your framework might be a system for teaching the way Dre's yours is, or it just might be a framework for how this fits in the marketplace, but to take that moment. So I want to ask you what I would consider a very leading question, but I cannot get off this podcast without asking you about this. Because it has been so helpful for me as well, as I know thousands of others across the globe. Will you talk about your third day? Because to me, this is the tool that when you first shared it with me, that mastermind years ago, helped me deal with lack of motivation, willpower, like just all of that kind of came into place after I understood this
concept.
Sure.
So the third day is, I'll give an analogy that will help everybody understand it. And I think this is how you first heard me talk about it. And right now is a perfect time. We're talking, let's say, the beginning of the year. And of course, people start flooding into the gym and start working out and hiring trainers. And if you work in the fitness industry, you're doing really well in January of every year. So at the beginning of the year, everybody's in the gym, working out, excited. You know, the first day, everybody's excited to go to the gym. New workout gear from Lululemon, new sneakers. You hired a personal trainer. You signed up for a boot camp class. You're all set. You're ready to go. Now, that first workout kicks your butt. Yeah,
all you're in. All in.
Yeah. First workout kicks your butt because you haven't worked out in a while. Maybe you took some time off from lockdowns, maybe the holidays, you gained some weight, whatever's been going on, and you're not in shape. But even though that you had to drag yourself back to the car after the workout because you're dead tired, you look at yourself in the mirror and you say, hey, I'm doing this. Now, on the second day, your body is a little bit sore. Now, half your body's sore because of that workout from the first day. You're still not in no game shape just yet, but you're still pretty excited. It's still a new situation. That workout plan that you made still has the new car smell, metaphorically speaking. You get yourself in the gym and that workout kicks your butt. The other half of your body that wasn't sore, now that's sore too because you're not in shape yet. But you drag yourself home after that workout and you say with just a little bit less enthusiasm, I'm doing this. Now, by the third day, already things have changed. By the third day, your body and mind are having a difference of opinion. By the third day, those workout shoes feel like they're made of cement. The third day is the day that you might just roll over in bed, grab your phone, text your trainer and say, look, just charge me for the session, but I'm not coming in. The third day is any situation. It's not limited to the gym and it doesn't have to be 3 days in a row, but it's any situation in life, at work, in the gym, wherever, where the newness of the situation has worn off. The novelty is completely gone and all of this left is you and the actual hard work that is required to achieve this goal. That it didn't look like it was much hard work when it was so shiny and you signed up for it. But now you're realizing, okay, this is not all fun and games. It's not one big party. There's some actual work that has to be done here. And it happens in every area of life. and this is why I call it a third day. This is what separates the pros from the amateurs, because a professional does not feel great every single day. I'm sure you don't always feel like recording this podcast, right? And a parent doesn't always feel like dealing with their kids. An athlete, LeBron James, doesn't always feel like playing in every game. But you can't tell if you're watching from the outside looking in, because the professional shows and delivers anyway. And that's a choice. It is not a talent. It's not even really a skill. It's a choice. And when you master the third day, you develop it's kind of like a momentum that you create, and it feeds off of itself of showing up and consistently delivering. And this is why the pros are the pros, because they don't have a choice but to show up because they're getting paid by definition. The amateur can choose to opt out when they feel like it because they're an amateur. Nobody's paying them, so it's not a big commitment for them. But the pro, they have to show up every single time. So mastering the third day is a requirement to be a professional.
So I want to share a couple stories with you, Dre, that kind of relate to definitely your third day. And the first one I'll say is, and just for the audience listening, I would just say that I think Dre said this, it's not always Wednesday. Sometimes it's 3 weeks in, sometimes it is 2 months in. But the point is, when you hit that, like the lull, the desperation and the exhaustion and the frustration, and you're probably not seeing the results yet because you got more work to do, but right. So you're not as motivated. It is so interesting to me that, so when you kind of shared that with me kind of a while back and I started to apply it to my business, to your point about momentum, what I found is that as long as I could get through my third day, the rest was cake. And I don't mean that like what I had to do was easy or the days were short, but to your point, that momentum picked up. But if I stopped on the third day, which I was doing in some areas, the problem is then I had to restart the engine. And that's almost worse than just getting through the damn third day. Yeah, if you're out there and you constantly find yourself restarting, or whether that's fitness, life, work, whatever it is, I'm guessing it's because you're quitting on the third day and having to start over. It takes more gas to start your car than it does to just keep
Absolutely.
It going.
And it's a universal law. It's a scientific law of inertia. An object in motion tends to remain in motion until or unless acted upon by an outside force. So that applies to human beings as well. So that is exactly what the third day is.
That's funny. That's actually how I've described myself to other people. I'm like, I'm a body at rest, stays at rest person. Like if I sit down, I'm out. Like, do not let me just sit down with nothing to do. I'm asleep and I'm done. But as long as I keep moving, I'm totally good. Well, I love that concept. And I had to ask you about it because I think it's a really important one, particularly for everyday innovators out there trying to push new ideas, take their work and their careers and their life to new levels. I think that's where we cap ourselves out. Is we stop on the third day. If you were to give just one or two quick tips of like, hey, here's how I've learned to get through the third day, what advice would you give?
The first one is the third day is not something that you don't need to psych yourself up or will yourself into mastering the third day, which is what a lot of people try to do. The problem with doing that, even though you might get away with it a time or two, is that willpower is kind of like the battery on your phone. You don't have a charger, eventually the battery is going to die. You don't want to have to will yourself through it. What you would rather do is change your self-image of how you see yourself. Instead of saying to yourself, hey, I'm just not a disciplined person, so now I have to force myself to be disciplined on the third day. Instead, change your self-image and change who you're being. Because the principles of achieving in life is a three-step process of be, do, and have in that order. Many people get it backwards, not even backwards. They just skip the step of being and they go straight into the doing, right? Most people, when they come to you for advice tomorrow, what do they ask you? What do I need to do? All right, tell me everything I need to do. Tell me all the steps. Nobody ever asked you or me, what type of person do I need to be? All right, how do I need to change how I see myself in the mirror? When that changes, the actions automatically flow from that. Because if you see yourself as the type of person who goes to the gym every day, you see yourself as that person, what are you going to do? You're going to rearrange your schedule. Okay, how can I get into the gym on Tuesday? Because it's not on my calendar. All right, what gym am I going to? Where's my gym membership? Where are my workout sneakers? You will start taking the actions to reflect the person that you have chosen to be. It will reflect your self-image. So when you change your self-image, the actions will automatically flow. Most people skip that step and they go straight into the actions and they wonder why their actions are not producing results. So that's number one. And number two is you create a strategy for yourself, because being is not just no law of attraction, woo-woo, everything's going to fall in your lap just because you said it. Right. So the strategy is, all right, let's make a plan for how am I actually going to do this? I'm going to work out every day. I probably need to be a little bit more cognizant about what I'm eating. I need to go to bed early enough that I can wake up and actually have the energy to go to the gym. Let me hire a trainer because I won't know what to do when I get in the gym because I haven't been in there for a while. Let me make sure I have enough workout gear. If I'm going to the gym 5 days a week, I probably need more than just these two sweatsuits, right? I'm probably going to need some more workout gear and some sneakers. So all of these things, how am I going to get from the gym to work? Am I going to shower at the gym? Am I going to come home and change? All right, does this fit into my schedule? That's the strategy. So actually start planning out, how am I actually going to do this? And as they say, plans are useless, but planning is priceless. The time that you spend just thinking about what you're going to do, that's an investment, because now you'll start thinking about, okay, well, what if this happens? What's my contingency plan if this goes this way or this is happening? That is just an extra commitment that people make when they're really serious about doing something. So changing your self-image and actually strategizing and planning for how you're going to do it, those are two tips I can give.
You know, that is so powerful. And I hope everybody listening just takes the rest of the day, whatever time you're listening to this, to really think about the be part before even the do part, to your point. You're right. Nobody asked me, who do I need to be? And I think the same is true in business too, isn't it? Like, who do I need to be that leader I want to be, to run that company I want to run, to get that promotion I want? We think, all right, what are the tasks that I have to accomplish? And I think performance reviews are unfortunately set up like that, right? Here are the five things you need to do to be considered for promotion, not what type of person you need to be. So our conversation is so timely because just this morning, I was talking to my gym buddy. We go 4 days a week together. Our class starts at 5:30. We meet at 5:15 so that we can walk first, so that we can warm up before we even get there because we don't have the time. And last night, I was up super late watching a football game. It never occurred to me to not get up in the morning, like, because of course that is what I do. Like, I love fitness, but I had to work my way into being that person. It didn't happen overnight. And I would say, if you looked at me 7 years ago, I would have hit the snooze button and been like, oh, I was up too late, I didn't get enough sleep. So it is interesting how that being, once being not an athlete in the kind of professional sense of it, but in the daily sense of it, became part of my identity, then it became easy to make that decision, to your point about willpower. And I think we do confuse willpower, discipline, and planning.
Absolutely. Discipline and willpower are two completely different things, because willpower is something you have to remember to do. Discipline runs on its own energy. Discipline is a system. And the system, all you had to do is follow the system, and it is the energy. It does the willpower for you. Whereas willpower is something you have to remember. Eventually, you're going to either forget or you're going to run out. And that's the discipline between. That's the difference between using willpower versus using discipline. Discipline, people you can count on. Willpower, not so much.
I can't believe we're kind of running out of time because I have so many other questions for you. But Dre, I'm curious. So your Everyday Innovator style is collaborative risk taker. So for those listening, that means that it's all about whole innovation and bold innovation. The whole being pulling all these disparate parts together, which I think, given what you were saying in the beginning about pulling all these different career elements together to find the sweet spot, is exactly that. That's collaborative style. And then the risk taker is all about innovating in the uncomfortable. So not just being careless by any means, but really being willing to leap off the ledge and figure it out as you go. In fact, doing best when you figure it out kind of as you go. And in fact, I think one time you and I were talking about the fact that sometimes we push ourselves into uncomfortable places. I'm a risk taker too. Push ourselves to force uncomfortable when things are comfortable, because we are actually better there than we are in the comfortable space. And that's not true for everybody, and that's okay, but definitely for risk takers. But I'm curious, given your innovator style and your business and your life, what advice do you have for other everyday innovators out there looking to innovate and influence and make that impact?
Wow, that's a great question. I'd say, well, the biggest thing for all of us, especially in a world that with so many people putting themselves out there in so many different ways, is being able to move yourself to take action. Just like we talked about with the third day, like I talked about in my story, as I'm sure you've had to do many times in your career, Tamara, is, can you activate yourself to action even when you don't know what to do? And what I tell people is what I call the 10% rule of information and action. You got 10% of the information, that's enough to get started. You're never going to know 100% of the information. Most of the information that you need to get to the finish line of what you're doing, that information doesn't even exist right now. So if you're waiting for 100% of it to get started, you'll never get started. So start now. You will get activity knowledge. You'll learn along the way. You'll have stories to tell. And you jump yourself ahead of 90% of the competition who's waiting to get all the information before they get started. So just move yourself to action.
What a great point. I'd never thought about the fact that the information that you're waiting for doesn't even exist.
Yeah, if you think about it, it's true.
What are you waiting for? I love it. All right. One last personal question. So we can get to know you a little bit at the end here. What's one thing we'd be surprised to learn about you?
One thing you'd be surprised to learn about me. Probably about, this may be about 2012, I entered a hot dog eating contest, believe it or not. This is a 4th of July hot dog eating contest. It's right here in Miami in Coconut Grove. And I did not do well. You probably might not be surprised by that. I think I ate 2 hot dogs, 2.5 hot dogs in 10 minutes. You only get 10 minutes. But if y'all ever watch the hot dog eating contest on TV, and you see how they just eat them like it's a machine. You get the gag reflex because that bread, and you got to dip it in the water so it can go down the pipe quicker. I got the gag reflex was so strong, I couldn't eat anymore. And I don't even like hot dogs. So I only ate 2, but the winner, he only ate like 8. This is an amateur, very amateur hot dog eating contest.
Okay, but Dre, I got to know, like, what made you decide to enter a hot dog eating contest?
I only entered because I was walking around in the area where they were going to have it. And like one of the workers saw me and they see me, this big guy, athletic, like, all right, he might be able to eat a lot of hot dogs. So he asked me and it was 4th of July. So I'm like, all right, why not? So I said, all right, I'll do it. That's the only reason I did it. I didn't sign up. I didn't volunteer. He asked me. So I said, all right.
That is surprising, but good for you for trying. A for effort. And now, you know, right? You never want to do that again. Dre, that was fantastic. Thank you so much for the great insights and the knowledge. And I hope everybody out there listening really takes away. There's a lot to take away, but like for me, what rises to the top is about the third day and about the difference between discipline and willpower. Like I really makes me think about, am I really setting my structures up for success so that I don't have to rely on willpower? And I'm not sure I'm always doing that. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing.
Congratulations. By listening to this podcast, you took another step towards becoming an everyday innovator. To leap forward, visit www.gotolaunchstreet.com and take the Innovation Quotient Edge Assessment to discover your unique everyday innovator style and access the Everyday Innovator Digital Magazine for the top tools, insights, and inspiration at your fingertips 24/7. Tamara will be back with another Everyday Innovator conversation soon. In the meantime, if you got a nugget of value out of this podcast, let Tamara know by leaving a 5-star review and comment. Your review equals more guests, more listens, bigger impact. Until next time.